Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. For generations, vegetables have been relegated to side dish status on the typical American table. And that's changing, however, and farmer Lee Jones has been at the forefront of that change, working his 300-acre family farm along the Ohio coast of Lake Erie, growing every imaginable vegetable for top-notch restaurants around the world. And here, his work is part of a decades-long quest that started with his father to grow healthier, high-quality vegetables without chemicals or genetic modifications. In the process, the Chef's Garden has established a world-famous center for innovation in research and regenerative farming, and also operates the Culinary Vegetable Institute, attracting top chefs from around the world. Vegetables aren't usually the star at the holiday table, but if that's what you want to make it this year, we've got a great guest for you. Farmer Lee Jones is a James Beard Award recipient and the author of the 2021 book titled The Chef's Garden, A Modern Guide to Common and Unusual Vegetables with Recipes. Welcome back.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
It's so nice to have you in the studio. Our radio listeners can't see you, but you're dressed in denim overalls with a red bow tie and a baseball cap. It's sort of your uniform, right?
What? It is. I don't own another pair of pants. I have 18 pairs of overalls, 18 white shirts, 18 red bow ties.
Even for the black ties?
Even for the black ties. I've been in big parties at James Beard in New York City, and guys are in tuxedos and the ladies in evening gowns, and a guy will come up and whisper and says, man, I wish I could pull that off. You look so comfortable. So, you know, you can't make a silk purse out of a sow's ear, so I might as well go as the farmer that I am.
Well, it works for what you do every day, but, you know, you said you're just a farmer, just a dirt guy, whatever.
Just a dirt farmer.
Dirt farmer. But it's so much more than that. And I do wonder to what extent you actually are out in the fields, you know, not right now, of course, but, you know, during the growing season.
Well, you know, it's surprising. It still is the growing season. I think that we tend to think that after Labor Day, it's all over. When sweet corn is done, then we're done for the year. Some of the very best vegetables come on the shoulders of the season. The cool temperature brings the sugar, the natural sugar levels up. The Brussels sprouts, we won't even start harvesting them until after we've had some frost. And they're just, it's been a really beautiful late fall to harvest. We had a record day yesterday sending product back out to restaurants before Thanksgiving. The restaurants are back with a vengeance.
And they want to do it right. You know, this is, I think, the first year I remember seeing the Brussels sprout branches stalks in a Kroger grocery store.
I think it's just a wonderful testament to how far we've come. If you look at the selection 20 years ago, even, and where we're at today. But I think that, you know, unless you've lived under a rock for the last 3 years, you recognize that we have a food waste crisis in the United States. 40% is the number we seem to all have in our heads. Quite frankly, I think it's understated. I think it's unconscionable to think that we have a 40% food waste in America, and yet we have people in our own counties that are going hungry. And so I think that, you know, the idea, and we reference this in the book, you know, we're conditioned to think of only one part of a plant to be consumed. And if you think about how majestic a Brussels sprout plant is, it grows to 3.5-4 feet tall. It takes all season, 9-10 months to grow it. And these beautiful leaves that are actually there for a reason, to provide a canopy so that the Brussels sprout doesn't get burned. I would defy any listener to be able to tell the difference, if they were blindfolded, in a Brussels sprout leaf and a collard green leaf. They're in the cruciferous family. Broccoli, cauliflower, cabbage, Brussels sprouts, all in that same family. And so we can use all of the plant. In European countries that have figured out a way to survive over hundreds of years, learn to use every part of the animal, the gelatin between the hooves and the oxtail, and every part of that animal, and they could respect the animal by using all of it. Why can't we do the same with a vegetable? You know, we have to be considerate of the environment today. And the resources, and of course the love and the nutrients that go in, but the resources, the water, and the energy that it takes to produce this. And then to waste part of that plant is just ridiculous.
Did I see a recipe in here where you use the stalk of the Brussels sprout plant?
Yes. Yeah. You know, we've all heard of bone marrow.
Yeah.
You can peel that outer layer of skin off, and you can cut that stalk down, and you can actually create an amazing vegetable marrow with it.
A marrow, literally, that you restuff into something else. You put into something else. And then there's another recipe in there for parsnips, parsnip cannolis. And I saw the picture and I'm like, wait a minute. And I had to read it over and over. I mean, I just to convince myself that what you were saying was really true. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, Chef Jamie Simpson is the head of the Culinary Vegetable Institute on the farm for us. And him and Tristan spent 3.5 years putting this book together. And I'm not qualified to be able to talk about the details of these recipes, but I can tell you that parsnips, you know, some of the listeners may remember that was not that long ago in our history here in America that gas was rationed, that there were gas stamps, that the rubber was rationed, that you couldn't buy a new vehicle, sugar was rationed. Parsnips were actually a great substitute, and they're unbelievably sweet, and parsnips were used to be able to enhance the sweetness of many of our dishes in America.
They're wonderful, and yet they've been, you couldn't, there was a time 20 years ago where it was hard to find them.
That's right. It's so exciting to see such a resurgence. We're working with Louisiana State University, who is working extremely hard to develop or reintroduce old varieties of sweet potatoes. You know, we tend to think of sweet potatoes at Thanksgiving time, but they're all shaped exactly the same, and we have an expectation of them looking a particular way. And they allow us to do tastings and send them tasting notes, just like if you were doing a wine tasting, and send notes back, and then they allow us the opportunity to grow out some of these new old varieties. But some of them are 14, 18 inches long. They're probably only as big around as a cucumber, and you would think, what's wrong with that? There's absolutely nothing wrong with it. It's amazing. Our chef has used the sweet potatoes as a dessert. We have one variety called creme brulee, and they don't disappoint.
There's a recipe in the book where you make sweet potato ice cream, and then they use the sweet potato skins. They carve them, carve them out, and then they use them as cones.
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, we tend to throw the most nutritious parts of things away. We peel an apple, we peel a peach, we peel a potato, we peel a carrot, we peel a beet. The nutrition's in the skin. I just had a koji squash for dinner the other night, which is a new hybrid, not genetically modified. It's not voodoo. It's just hybridization and crossed with a butternut. And it's so sweet that I ate the entire skin on it. It's just unbelievably delicious. You get earthy notes of chestnut and butternut and just yumminess.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My special guest today is Farmer Lee Jones, James Beard Award recipient and expert on regenerative agriculture, which he practices on his family's Chef's Garden farm near Lake Erie. His new book is titled The Chef's Garden, A Modern Guide to Common and Unusual Vegetables with Recipes. And if you want to talk to him, if you have a question for him, please give us a call. Don't wait. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Yeah, you're making me, you know, I knew this was going to do this. I'm getting hungry, of course. You know, a lot of people are getting into that holiday mode over the next couple months. And, you know, when it comes to the traditional feasts, I don't think vegetables, I think they kind of take on a starring role if you want in a way. Because the only other thing is the turkey or the protein, you know, the animal protein you're going to have if you're going to have it. But you help world-renowned chefs prepare their menus with what's on hand. What's on hand now that you'd like people to experiment with and do something different with this year?
You know, it's so exciting to see vegetables really having their day. I don't believe this is a fad. I believe it's a trend. I believe that for the support of the environment and sustainability of society, we have to move, and it is happening, towards a plant-based, plant-forward future. And it's really exciting. 11 Madison Park, who was the number one restaurant in the world in New York City, reopened after COVID, and they're entirely plant-based. I think that, you know, it's about really celebrating the seasons. We lost our way in America. We lost our sense of where the food was coming from and when it was in season. And it becomes up to us to really kind of force that back. And it's exciting. Look, am I recommending that we completely stop eating meat? No, I'm not. know where it's coming from, know how it's grown, know how the people on those farms are being taken care of, because they think that that's a really critical part. In the old days, the farmers said, leave the land in better condition for future generations. And that's still noble, and it's still one of our primary goals. But if we don't create an environment on the farm for our people to want to work there, that they're paid in a way that they can send the children, their children, to schools of their choices and have homes that they dream of, then it's not really a regenerative situation. It may be sustainable, but it's not regenerative. So, you know, I think that when asparagus is in season, we should eat it 3 times a day. When it's out of season, we should lust for it for 10 more months. Celebrate the root vegetables and the kales and the broccolis and the cauliflowers and the sweet potatoes, all of the amazing things that this region supplies at this time of year.
I think it's interesting. There's a distinction between sustainability and regenerative.
Say that 3 times fast.
No way. I can't even believe I asked the question. Only because I can barely pronounce that word. But what's the difference?
Well, if you think about the word sustain, it's to hang on. I kind of visualize it as hanging on to a bar and your hands are slipping. And
like
you're
a little
just
kitten poster?
Yeah. Well, we feel that way some years on the farm. Regenerative means you're rebuilding. You're rebuilding and you're growing people and you're growing opportunities for people, but you're also supportive of the environment so that we have a healthy environment for the next generation. People. It's so critical that we create an environment that's healthy and fair wages and good wage, not just fair wages, but great wages. If we don't do that, then the good people go to some other industry. We have to have good quality people. Why do you think there was such a mass exodus from the farm kids back in the 50s and 60s? Because they could go out. Gosh, I can remember friends of mine saying, gee, I was going to go to work and get $5 an hour. And that was a big deal when I was a kid, when I was 17 or 18,
yeah.
And they could go get in. And so, you know, for our people to be able to stay, it's not just about the money, but it's that environment. But regenerative agriculture is rebuilding the soil. It's rebuilding the people. It's taking care of the environment. We have a saying, healthy soil, healthy vegetables, healthy people, healthy environment. And that's really the core of what we're trying to do every day on the farm.
And, you know, it all started with your father and being down on his luck. I mean, ready to give up the farm.
Well, whether he was ready or not, we did. Interest rates, unbelievably, in the late 70s, early 80s, at 22%. Earl Butz was the Secretary of Agriculture at the time, and his message to farms was to get big or get out. And we were farming, we were supplying some folks right here in the Columbus area, the Big Bear chain, A&P, which was Atlantic and Pacific Tea Company, Kroger. Many chain grocery stores, high volume, low margin, following the way the universities were teaching us, control your insects and your weeds with insecticides and pesticides. And it was all about farming in a way that reduced cost, produce the most tons per acre, keep the cost as low as possible. Ultimately, with 22% interest rates and a hailstorm that wiped out every crop on the farm, the banks were closed. I stood at 19 with my mom and dad, my brother and sister, all of our neighbors, all of our competitors, everybody that was there to celebrate our failure. And they auctioned everything off right down to my mother's car and our house. And we started over. As devastating as that was, it gave us an opportunity to rethink what we were doing. And, you know, one of the real, I think, crises is that from 1930 to 2020, the nutritional level in vegetables has gone down by 50%, and it's continuing to go down at an increasing rate. So here we are. We've lost the farm. What are we going to do? How are we going to start over? And it never really set right with Dad, the way that we were feeding the plant with the chemical and synthetic inputs and using the insecticides and the pesticides. We started looking back at agricultural books that are 100, 150 years old, and they weren't using any of that. And the crazy part is that the nutritional levels were 50% higher. Why? Why is that? With all the technology and as smart as we are today, how have we lost the nutritional level. In the meantime, if you can visualize 50% decrease, a 3,000% increase in kidney, liver, heart, cancer disease, attention deficit disorder, autism, childhood obesity, allergies, diabetes, a 3,000% increase. It's not sustainable. It's not even not sustainable. It's certainly not regenerative. It's not sustainable for our society. We've got to move that in a different direction. You start looking at these books and looking at how they're rebuilding the soil. We jokingly talk about, I'm sure your listeners have said it or heard it said, I'm going to go out and harvest some vitamin D from the sunshine. There's so much more truth to that than people understand. So Dad pushed for a laboratory on the farm where we could actually test what the nutritional level was in the soils. It's basically like going and having blood work drawn. Hmm. What are you high in? What are you low in? What's the par? What's the level? And then what's really cool, and it's our personal belief, not trying to cast my aspersions, it's our personal belief that God designed a system far superior to anything we could fake out chemically or synthetically. And so based on those deficiencies, what's really neat is different types of plants will harvest different types of energy from the sun. Clover, alfalfa, buckwheat, rye. We have a 15-species planting that will sow into the fields. And if you can visualize those plants as receptacles, and they're harvesting the sun's energy, and then it goes down and it feeds the biology that's all dead when you're using genetic modification, because you're not only killing the weeds that they're trying to get rid of, you kill all the biology in the soil. That's why we've got all the algal bloom problems in the lakes, in the Great Lakes, because that fertilizer has no way to break down because the biology is dead. When you're not using GMO, you're planting the cover crops, planting the right cover crops, you feed the biology. And then when you plant the turnip or the beet or the carrot or the radish or the spinach, whatever we want to grow to consume the next year, it picks that all back up. We're seeing numbers in some cases as high as 300 to 500 times higher than the USDA average. Now, we're not able to do that consistently across the board. We don't think it's high enough. We think the USDA level is too low. So that 300 to 500, we think there's room to improve that yet. But we can turn this around. It's exciting to think there's hope that we can have a better day, that we can have healthy, nutritious vegetables. Hippocrates said, let food be thy medicine and medicine be thy food. Now, I'm not trying to make any political statement about shots. We have our shots. We posted that, and we got some flack over it. That's not the point at all. It's just that we believe that with healthier vegetables, we can be a healthier world. And we have a goal to be able to grow the healthiest, most nutritious vegetables humanly possible.
You're listening to Farmer Lee Jones. He's a James Beard Award recipient, an expert on regenerative agriculture, which he practices on his family's Chef's Garden farm near Lake Erie. His new book is titled The Chef's Garden, A Modern Guide to Common and Unusual Vegetables with Recipes. Questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. The current success of the Chef's Garden Farm in Huron, Ohio, stands in contrast to the struggles of the 1980s when interest rates hit 22% and a hailstorm wiped out the crops. But not long after, the family farm was auctioned off in a story that was playing out across the U.S. at the time. But the challenges ushered in an opportunity for the Jones family to farm in a different way, shifting agricultural practices away from chemicals and genetic modification. Still with us is Farmer Lee Jones. He's part of the founding family of the Chef's Garden. He's a James Beard Award recipient and the author of the 2021 book titled The Chef's Garden, A Modern Guide to Common and Unusual Vegetables with Recipes. If you'd like to speak with Farmer Lee Jones, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Your father, Bob Sr., developed these forward-thinking ways. You were in college at the time, I think, or college age, and, you know, you brought your youth and optimism to it, I'm sure. He had previously worked for a progressive farmer, though. He had a mentor out there somewhere, right?
Well, he had many. One was Dr. Eugene Whitmire, right here as a professor at Ohio State. Dr. Bernie Irwin, who just recently retired, also a professor here at Ohio State. He said that most of his mistakes, he could take full responsibility for doing them all on his own. He said that we had to continue to make mistakes at a faster rate than the competition. I'm the dummy in the family. I left college. I was started down in my second year at Ohio State when we lost the farm. I came back. I'm the oldest in the family and came back and went to work with Dad. And my brother has a horticultural degree here at Ohio State and at the Ohio State University, I should say. We're very proud. And, of course, here we are on Michigan and Ohio State weekend. That's pretty exciting. And my sister's got more education than all of us, and she's not on the farm. So, it's just a lot of what we learned through trial and error. But you go back, and we really resource. We've got two libraries. My dad was a voracious reader. And going back and looking at the way fundamentally that they were farming. My dad has a saying that the only thing we were trying to do is get as good as the growers were 100 years ago. And obviously that's true. If you come to the farm, it's kind of like we've had, in fact, it's referenced in the book. We seem like we're the Willy Wonka of the vegetable world. But you'll see old equipment that's smaller, lighter in compaction. Compaction's a big issue with soil. You don't want to compact that. We're on old lake bottom about 11,000 years ago. It's some of the richest sandy loam in the world. But you don't want to compact that. And so we use older, smaller pieces of equipment. But then on the other hand, we're using some of the most advanced technology we can, particularly in the laboratory, to be able to have an understanding of what's going on with nutrition, nutritional density. It's really exciting. The more we dig in, the more we learn that we have to learn. But really exciting stuff.
Right. He created a research lab. He hired scientists. Now, every farmer I've ever met is usually some kind of a scientist. I mean, you have to know your science now, even if you're doing it in the typical way today.
In a commercial, sure.
Yeah, in a commercial way, yeah.
Right. Well, you know, there was a Dr. Scow that started out as a animal veterinarian, and he kept noticing the occurrences in animals. And, you know, there's the old saying of you are what you eat, but you are also what the animal eats. And he kept noticing the same occurrences, and they were mineral deficiencies. And he completely left the animal veterinarian and went into soil science. And, oh, my gosh, to get Dad and him, Dr. Scow, around the table talking soil, they could talk soil literally all day. But really, it's about everything starts with healthy soil. And that's really where the core of it is.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is Farmer Lee Jones. He's a James Beard Award recipient, an expert on regenerative agriculture, which he practices on his family's Chef's Garden Farm near Lake Erie. His new book is titled The Chef's Garden, A Modern Guide to Common and Unusual Vegetables with Recipes. Questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Kirk in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Kirk.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
I just wanted to interject that we've had the enjoyment and privilege of following the Chef's Garden and Culinary Vegetable Institute for several years now. We're able to serve Thanksgiving dinners up there for local veterans. And while I hesitate to share the secrets, if you have an opportunity to have a dinner with Chef Jamie or to tour the farm and to find out more, it's really a remarkable experience.
Yep, it's on my bucket list.
Thank you. Thanks for the kind words, Kirk.
Thank you, Kirk. Thanks for calling. Everybody else,
thank you.
You bet. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Brad in Clintonville. Oh, I guess that's not ready.
You know, one of the things Kirk was mentioning is, you know, during the COVID, 100 100% of our business was directly tied to restaurants.
Yeah.
And it just stopped dead in its tracks. So we launched a nationwide home delivery. But we have a facility at the Culinary Vegetable Institute, and the idea was for chefs to be able to come, bring their culinary teams, do R&D, R&R, go out in the fields with us, harvest product. We're at product at different stages than they've worked with and come back and be able to play with it and develop menus and recipes. We pivoted to a Airbnb for the guest chef suite. And so folks have been able to come and stay right on the farm, and then they can order a chef's picnic basket or they can order a farm tour. We just had a couple that got married on a Saturday.
Oh, what
they
fun.
Arrived on Sunday. They were both chefs, and they wanted their honeymoon to be spent working on the farm. And they picked sweet potatoes, and they picked carrots, and they helped at the farm market. And it was an amazing week for them. We had a blast.
That is wonderful. How has the subscription or the shipping gone as far as just shipping nationally? How's it going?
Really well. You know, it was basically starting a brand new business in the middle of COVID.
Yeah.
And the first thing we did was sent 300 boxes out to chefs around the country that we had been working with that had been probably working 80 to 100 hours a week, missing every holiday, missing birthdays, missing anniversaries with their families. And all of a sudden, they're at home. Well, guess what? They still keep cooking. And so we sent a box to them and said, stay healthy. We're concerned about you. This is going to be over. We thought naively it was going to be over sooner. But in the meantime, we're launching a nationwide home delivery. And if you do something fun with the vegetables, we'd love for you to share it online with your friends and mention that we're starting it online. And there was a real organic support. It's the difference when we lost the farm in the early 80s and this time. And it was really scary. I was kind of like on adrenaline that first month because it was like deja vu. And this time there was a safety net, and it was chefs in the culinary industry around the country that said, no, wait a minute. We're going to help hold you up. And nobody ever does anything by themselves. We're just so grateful for everybody that has got the boxes over the last year and continues. You know, people have asked, well, once the restaurants are back, is this going away? Heck no. We recognize it. Sometimes it takes a bigger stick for some of us. And we should have been doing this long ago.
The mother of invention, right?
That
necessity.
Boy, for sure, if there ever was. And we opened a farm market on the farm. First time we've done retail in 40 years.
That's something.
Yeah.
Wow. Boy, we've got some calls coming in. Brad in Clintonville, you're on the air with Farmer Lee Jones. Hi, Brad.
Oh, hello. Hello, Farmer Jones. I have two quick questions. One, I wonder how you feel about hydroponic produce production and its quality. And number two, I wonder if you've heard the recent reports about outside of Boulder, Colorado, where they have put solar arrays, large arrays of solar panels in fields, and they're growing veggies between the solar panels, which really seems to be helping the growth of the produce because they need less water because the solar panels are providing some shade from the hot sun. And I just wonder what you think about those things.
I heard that on NPR, Brad. Yeah.
I love it. I love the idea of the solar panels. Anything that we can do to be able to create renewable energy is, I'm all for it. The hydroponic, look, you're not going to get me to knock anything in agriculture. There are some amazing hydroponic systems, some really huge ones, and we may need it to feed the world. So I would never knock it. We have not been able to find a way to be able to get the nutritional density levels that we are looking for in hydroponic. Again, not trying to knock it. There's some great operations out there doing some great work. So I'm not saying anything against it. For us personally, we don't believe in the use of hydroponic. We're looking for a hybrid way to be able to do that, but we believe that the soil is really fundamental in providing the opportunity for the biology that occurs. There's so many things that occur in that soil that are really good. And so trying to outsmart nature, it works. But for us, we haven't been able to find a way to make that work effectively for our goals.
Thanks a lot for that call. Leslie in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Leslie.
Hi. And I'm calling because I am so excited to hear Farmer Lee Jones on your program again. After his first presentation a month or so ago, I ordered one of his boxes of produce, and it was really lovely, and I appreciated it so much. And I was so surprised when I heard him speak the first time, and you kept saying he's got a farm on Lake Erie. Mm-hmm. I looked it up, and I thought, oh, my gosh, it's right around the corner from me. Because my husband and I have a cottage at Lakeside. We've had a cottage for 40 years.
Yeah.
We never knew that we had such a resource, 20 miles up the road.
So did you go to the farmer's market?
No, I didn't know about it until I heard him speak the first time. So okay. I can't wait until the summer. So I can come over. And I also just emailed Lakeside to see if we could get you to speak at Lakeside, Mr. Jones. I'm just so excited. Thank you. And thank you for the excellent and varied programming.
Thank you, Leslie. I appreciate it. Thank you so much for listening. You must have been listening during membership drive, so thanks a lot for that. Yeah.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. The farm market actually is open Saturdays only because we are struggling to get enough help, mm-hmm. but we're open until December 18th in Huron, Ohio.
Oh, okay.
And in the book, it shows a picture of the farm that we lost. One of the most heartbreaking days of my life. What's pretty amazing is that life is quite a journey. Last November, the farm came back into our family name, and that's where the farm market is back on the original homestead. And
oh, my gosh.
My brother's son, Zach, and his wife, Ellen, have come back and joined the farm, and they spent the winter rewiring the house and sanding down the floors. And my brother's daughter, Caitlin, has joined the team in HR. And so it's really exciting and very, very special to have the farm market there on the original homestead. We went up in the loft after we had finally got the farm back. There's 60 acres on the original farm, and we went up in a loft that was kind of hard to get to. And there, sitting, were six brand new, unused, 40-year-old Bob Jones Farms boxes that had been left.
Oh, my gosh.
And those were the label that my dad had packed under. And my dad went to work for the guy that he bought the farm from when my father was 14. And we went a little further back in the loft, and there was three or four brand new, unused, 70-year-old baskets that said Charles Nichols Farm on them. Mm-hmm. So it was a bridge for us, and it was pretty special. Those are up on display now.
I was going to say kind of a little museum pieces, but
right.
Oh, that's wonderful. Wow, I'm so glad. I'm so glad. I don't think you mentioned that. That makes me really happy. We have a lot of calls. I want to take a quick break. We'll get to everybody. My guest is Farmer Lee Jones, James Beard Award recipient and expert on regenerative agriculture, which he practices on his family's Chef's Garden Farm near Lake Erie. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking today about vegetables, regenerative farming with Farmer Lee Jones of the Chef's Garden. That's a 300-acre farm along the Ohio coast of Lake Erie. He's a James Beard Award recipient. His 2021 book is lovely. It is titled The Chef's Garden, A Modern Guide to Common and Unusual Vegetables with Recipes. We've got a lot of calls I just want to jump right to because they all have really, really great questions, and I love my listeners so much. Thank you. Linda in Knox County, you're on the air. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Ann. Oh, thank you so much for this. It's so exciting. The question I wanted to ask is if perhaps the way I am managing my raised bed garden on my harmonious little farm has kept the soil in good shape. The area where I have my garden has never been plowed. It's just always been left to itself, so nobody's ever dug it up. I built a raised bed and used things from all the other animals and things that grow on the farm to enrich the soil. So we have sheep, chickens, and horses, and of course lots of leaves. And that's how I've built up the soil in that bed. And I alternate the areas where I put my crops every year. In the area where I put vegetables, mm-hmm. the next year I put beans, and vice versa. And I have lots of earthworms. It looks like a happy place, and I'm wondering if I'm doing it right. Do I have a long way to go to make the nutrition better, or am I likely keeping things in a good way?
I think you're really on the right track. I mean, I was going to say, what's the earthworm population looking like? A lot of farmers are abandoning plows. There could be a plow that costs $20,000 new, and they're sitting in people's equipment yards, not even being used, and you can buy them for scrap metal price because they've recognized that plowing probably does more harm than good. I think that you're really on a great track. I would encourage you to get a winter rye in right now. You could still plant it now. Anything you can do to get plants that will hold the earth in place so you don't have the wind erosion this winter, but it'll also help harvest the sun's energy even in the wintertime. So you're definitely on the right track. I think you could be running a class about this. Good work.
Thanks for that call from Knox County. Let's see, Linda in Butler County, I guess. Hi, Linda.
Hi, I just have a quick question about soil testing. What's the best way to have your soil tested? Can you just use those kits from the hardware store, or should you send it somewhere? That's my only question.
Yeah, you can send it down to Ohio State University, and they have a whole division that does that, and it's affordable. I think that it's...
Is that through their extension?
Right.
Okay.
Right, or at Worcester. But absolutely get a test and find a par on where you're at. But if you can't or don't want to do that, you know, use the cover crops and harvest that energy and get a good cross section. Use the buckwheats in between crops during the summer and use the ryes and the vetches and the sedan grass, clover. Use those cover crops and use a multi-species cover crop and you'll get a good cross section. I think that it's really critical. But yeah, try and get a sample test done and you'll get an idea of what you're deficient in.
Thank you, Linda, for that call. Greg in Clintonville, you're on the air. Hi, Greg.
Hi. I'm just curious, how close do things like, you know, organic foods from the grocery store or, you know, whatever they're sourcing from Whole Foods, are they getting those from regenerative farming, or is it falling short of what you would hope for?
Well, I can't speak to what anybody else is doing. I can tell you that we are pulling product off of grocery store shelves, organic and inorganic. And what we're finding is that most of those levels are low because the model that farmers are asked to work within is keep the cost as low as possible, produce as many tons per acre as possible. What we're finding is the larger the product is, the lower the nutrient level. What happens is that the energy goes to keeping that plant alive. The goal of the plant is to reproduce its life. It may take going into the second year for it to shoot a seed stalk. A carrot takes the second year. But the larger that is to get the higher tons per acre, the lower we're finding that the nutrient density levels are. Picking young, picking at a microgreen stage is where we're actually getting the highest levels. We can't get it in microgreens grown as a hydroponic, but microgreens grown in soil, or if you're planting those and picking them young is where we're finding the highest levels.
Greg, thanks a lot for that call in Clintonville. So you do pull vegetables off the shelves in groceries to compare and contrast, right?
That. Yeah, right.
And studying
right.
And seeing what people are eating. Okay. And Tim in Jamestown, Pennsylvania, you're on the air. Hi, Tim.
Well, hi there. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Good. I'm kind of late to the program today, but I was wondering, you'd mentioned that, I think you'd mentioned that you were using... non-GMO type seeds and plants mm-hmm. for your vegetables.
Right.
And I was wondering How do you find that stuff?
Oh, that's a great question, and I'm glad to share it with all the listeners. There's a great organization out in Decorah, Iowa, Dr. Kent Waitley, at Seed Savers Exchange. It's a not-for-profit, and they do more. And Dr. Waitley has probably done more to preserve old heirloom varieties of seeds than anybody else I know. For a few dollars, and you can get on a listing, and people will share just because they want to preserve these old varieties of seed. My dad made a couple of trips out there. It's a pretty unique, diverse group of people that go out. My dad took an old Datsun because that's all we had at the time, and that had been given to us by a second cousin because they knew we were desperate and out of a vehicle, and they gave us this old car, and he took his tent and went out, and he brought, I think, 100 varieties of eggplant back that year, and we did testing on those and found the 15 varieties that we fell in love with and just couldn't get rid of. But SeedSaversExchange.org, for all the listeners, it's a great organization doing some superb work.
I'll try to get one of our producers to find that link and put it on our website at WOSU.org/allsides to make sure we get it exactly right. Tim in Jamestown, Pennsylvania, thanks for that call. 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And we have an email from Thomas who asks, any thoughts on permaculture or the scientist Farmer David Bloom and even the idea of farmers growing fuel for automobiles? Not with inefficient crops like corn, but with perhaps cattail marshes for water purification or sugar beets or algae.
I think that there's definitely potential with it. I am not knowledgeable on it. My brother has done deep dives on this. One of the cool things that we're doing, as a side note, our neighbor produces hundreds of acres of popcorn. And as a byproduct of popcorn, he has corn cobs as a waste product. He was paying to haul them over 8 miles away to get rid of them. We made a deal with him. We tore down 4 acres of 50-year-old greenhouse from the other side of Toledo because we couldn't afford the new stuff. And we didn't need it. We could repurpose the old. And we buy all of the corn cobs from him for $26 a ton, and he was paying to get rid of them, delivering them less than 1 mile now. And we use them, we store them all winter, and we use them to fuel boilers, and we ran 1 million foot of tubing through the ground. And so the boilers heat water to a hot water stage. We run the water through and recycle the water, and we use a renewable energy from our neighbor. So our neighbor wins. The environment wins, and everybody wins when we can use renewable sources. I think it's a really good idea. I think that there's a lot of work that could be researched yet. I'm all for it.
Thanks a lot for that call. Tim in Springboro, you're on the air. Hi, Tim.
Hi. I have a quick question about the relationship between walnut trees and growing tomato plants. We have great tomato plants up until about the middle of June, and then every year we have a problem with the leaves falling off, and then it just deteriorates completely. And we've moved the garden all around our 3 acres to try to get away from the walnut trees. And I'm wondering what recommendations you might have, or is there what the connection is between walnuts and tomatoes?
Well, talk about the question that stumps the dummy. I don't know. I don't know. I have heard that walnuts are problematic. We've not experienced that personally, but I have heard of it, and I can be of no help to you. I'm sorry.
Sorry about that, Tim, but thanks for listening. Jim in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Jim.
Hi.
Go ahead.
First of all, hello.
Yeah.
First of all, I think you're a genius. And I'm super impressed with the show. My question involves soil. I decided I was going to recreate soil for use on Mars. So I used compost, and I tried to amend the compost because my soil downtown Columbus is really compacted clay, 150 years of compaction. What advice do you have for me to make that soil more robust? Because it worked great the first year, but the second year, many problems. And I also use chickens and ducks and rabbits. So I use manure in it as well, but it's too sweet. What advice do you have for me?
I think it's hard to shotgun without having some more knowledge about it. I would do some testing. It sounds like you could be so hot with some of your nitrogens that you're burning things. You need to get a par and find out where you're at and then be able to amend based on what you find out on your mineral levels.
It can be, it's very specific depending.
It is.
Yeah. Jim, get it tested. The OSU Extension will do that for you. So check that out. You can just go online.
It's about balance.
Let's see. Judy in Champaign County, you're on the air. Hi, Judy.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Here's my question. I live on a glacial moraine. I live in western Ohio. So it's a rock hill and an ant hill. So I have to bring soil in, but I can never find good topsoil. We have a local place. It's full of, like, filler or something. It doesn't even look like soil. I have the amendment stuff. I have cow manure and chicken manure, but I'm just wondering how I find good topsoil for these raised beds.
I would say be aggressive and resourceful and watch when there are things happening or occurring. There's so much building going on, and people unfortunately take that topsoil off and put it in a big pile, and it sits for years behind even big buildings or stores that are being built, and they just have a pile of topsoil. I think if you get out and scrap around, I think you can find some topsoil. Keep working with the plants. It's unbelievable how nature will put things back in their balance. Try and keep those cover crops on. Some of the cover crops, like the sedan grass that can grow to 8 to 10 feet, as high as it is tall from above the ground, it goes just as deep below ground, and it really helps open that ground up and loosens it up. So keep pushing, keep trying, look for that topsoil. I think that would really help you.
Thank you, Judy, for that call. Appreciate it. Thanks to everybody for all your great calls. You make my job a lot easier, and I learn a lot as well. You've been, is there a sense that this is catching on at agricultural schools and colleges and that kind of a thing? Back in the day, it was how to get more for less.
Right.
Now, are you seeing this trend?
Absolutely. And I think that it really comes from us. I think that they recognize the demand. They change the courses based on what the demand is, where they see that things are moving. This isn't a fad. This is a trend. You know, as devastating as the pandemic has been, and we've all lost loved ones, we have people that within our circle of friends that have been very sick, we've had to look for those silver linings. And one, I believe, of those silver linings is that there are more gardens planted last year than in the history of the United States. You can even go back to the Victory Garden days, and there were way more gardens planted. And what's really cool about that is kids want to emulate their parents. And the kids saw the parents out in the garden, and so the kids want to help in the gardens. And the kids are more likely to be able to eat a carrot or willing to try a carrot if they helped grow it. And how exciting is it to think that we've got a whole new generation of gardeners for the next 100 years? So it's really exciting to see this trend, not a fad. We have to reconnect with where our food's coming from. Get out to these farmers' markets, support the farmers, grow your own garden, and let's reconnect with where our food sources are coming from.
You have been heavily involved with younger farmers and chefs. There's a 2021 scholarship named after you, the Farmer Lee Jones Scholarship, with $10,000 being awarded to agricultural students attending any accredited college or university in the U.S. How did that come about?
Well, Charlie Trotter was a chef who...
The great.
The great, yes. 816 West Armitage in Chicago. Many say that he put Chicago on the map as far as the culinary scene, and he was so far ahead of his time. He was one of the first chefs to have, a menu that would have just all vegetables on it, and that was in the 80s. But he did more for our family than we could ever repay, and he unfortunately left us early at 54 years old.
Yeah.
But was on our farm several times. He broke ground on the Culinary Vegetable Institute with a giant crane, not a shiny shovel. And we're good friends with the family, but they started a not-for-profit called the Trotter Project. And I'm involved with that. And there's so many inner city in Chicago folks that want to learn, and they're trying to target children that want to learn about where their food is coming from. And the most challenging part about that was having to pick. I was on a committee to help pick who was going to win that. And there's so many more eligible, qualified amazing youngsters in this country that really deserve that opportunity, and I just wish there was more that we could do.
Well, here we are, right in the middle of a big land-grant university. So, Farmer Lee Jones, thank you so much for your time today. It's been an absolute delight. Thanks for traveling here to be with us.
It was my enormous pleasure. Eat your veggies. Eat the rainbow. Eat as much color as you can ingest, and eat it raw. You get 50% more nutritional value when you're eating it raw.
And whenever I'm chopping up vegetables now, I always grab some for myself on the way. Farmer Lee Jones, James Beard Award recipient and expert on regenerative agriculture, which he practices on his family's Chef's Garden farm near Lake Erie. His new book is titled The Chef's Garden, A Modern Guide to Common and Unusual Vegetables with Recipes. Thanks so much for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.